We're tracing the history of children's literature on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A favorite book from childhood will leave a deep and lasting impression. And in recent years, an exhibition at the New York Public Library, it explored the role of children's books in society and culture. And one goal of the exhibit was to get adults to remember their childhood books, to jog our memory. And to do this, the curators used more than 200 books and artwork and other materials from the University of Minnesota Archives and Special Collections. And now there's this new book that's kind of a catalog of that exhibition. So what was your favorite book as a kid? What do you love about it? And have you revisited the book as an adult? Why do you think these books are valuable? Join in at 800-642-1234. Lisa von Drasek is curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota, and she wrote the foreword for the new book, The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. Lisa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, Kate.
So why is it so important to reflect on the children's books that made a really big impact on our lives?
Well, for us at the University of Minnesota, where I come from, the Curlin Collection holds the historic books, the actual rare books, the books from the 20s and the 30s and the 40s up to today, but also the original art and manuscripts. And as we page through this book, we find, as Leonard Marcus said, and that what you just said, is that these are the keystones of our childhood. These are part of what is attached to our memories. And also those significant moments of going to bed and being read to, that warm, comforting feeling. When people walk through our exhibit at the university, what we found was the stories came pouring out to the children and the grandchildren, and it was a real intergenerational experience.
Explain for us who Leonard Marcus is.
Leonard Marcus is a historian. I wish he could be with us today. He actually is in China doing embedded seminars in Beijing. But he is a historian and scholar of children's literature. And his passion is examining the makers. He calls them the makers of make-believe.
Oh, nice.
And I urge anyone who's interested in children's books to read. He has a biography of Margaret Weiss Brown. And if you don't know who she was, I will tell you. She was the writer of Goodnight Moon, which seems to be a childhood book that many of us didn't have as we were children, but is everywhere in the zeitgeist as parodies, and parents were actually sick of saying, good night, moon, good night, spoon.
Good night, nobody. Yeah, I mean, it's on pretty much every nightstand for parents, but on our nightstand as well. And so I'm wondering, Lisa, a few years back, the New York Public Library, they, you know, launched this exhibit focused exclusively on these children's books. What happened there? What was the spark?
So I'm a children's librarian, and I came from the Bank Street College of Education in New York and taught kids and was a school librarian and taught children's literature, and then moved to Minnesota to be the curator of the Curlin Collection. And in New York City at New York Public Library, Leonard Marcus was offered the opportunity to be the curator of an exhibit, and he could choose anything he wanted from the New York Public Library, which has a vast, vast collection. And he made connections between adult books and children's books and history. He talks about John Locke. He talks about Alice. He talks about all of these things and how they connected to social movements. And they took the whole floor of the first of the gallery space of the New York Public Library. And when you think of the New York Public Library, you think of that Lyon Library and those stairs you walk up. And that was where that exhibit was. And most library exhibits, you know, 6 months maybe. And this was extended twice, and over a 500,000 people came to see this exhibit.
Wow.
From all over the world. And I went and spent more than 10 hours over a weekend in this exhibit. And then it closed. And, you know, I called and I said, is there a catalog, Leonard? Is there going to be one so that we can revisit this experience and your words about these books? And he said, no, there's going to be no catalog. Is the exhibit going to tour? No. So here I am in Minnesota with this magnificent collection, and I started thinking, what if we took Leonard's words and the materials held at the Curlin Collection and matched them up? Would that be possible? And if we did that, we would make a catalog so that anyone anywhere could read his words about these objects and make these connections between history and culture and how we think about children's books of our childhood, how we may think about them differently now, and present day.
We're talking with Lisa von Drasik. She's curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota. She contributed to the new book, The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite children's book? Do you remember ones from your childhood, or do you read one now with your kids that you love? Join in. You can call 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Lisa, the goal of this exhibit wasn't just about getting people to really talk about children's books and their favorite ones, but also it was to go into how these books were made and how the authors thought about these books. What were some of those aha moments?
Well, I think for me, when we started reading Leonard's words about the books, tracing the history of different kinds of books and who was responsible for making them, let's just think about that Goodnight Moon book. We today think, but of course you would read to your child at bedtime. Of course, that's the perfect time to settle in and have that moment together, make those connections. But it wasn't always so. So Leonard speaks about Lucy Sprague Mitchell at the Bank Street College of Education, which before was called the Bureau of Educational Experiments.
That's slightly sterile.
Isn't that scary? And what it really was grown-ups looking at preschoolers and saying, we don't have books to put in their little hands. We do not have books that reflect their own lives, the daily life of a child. We think it's very normal to have a potty book or a book about going to school or a book about trucks. All of those things were pretty much new and came out of this writer's lab. So Maury Sendak and Ruth Krauss and Clement Hurd, these were all people who came out of the writer's lab. And when you think about these early childhood books that we just take for granted, when we're able to page through the catalog and see the pictures and photographs of these original books, it's pretty stunning to think about the Goodnight book being a fairly recent addition to our bookshelves. And I want to urge people, this is a unique partnership with the University of Minnesota Press, the University of Minnesota Libraries Publishing. So you can buy the book, and I love having this book in my hand. You probably have it in your hand. It's a beautiful book. But it's open access. So if you go to the University of Minnesota site, you can download this for free and have it on a device.
The book is called The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. Lisa von Drasik is our guide. She wrote the foreword, and she's at the University of Minnesota where she curates the Children's Literature Research Collections. So what books are you currently sharing with the little people in your life? What are you reading to them? How do you balance your favorites from childhood with newer titles? And how can we instill a love of reading in kids everywhere? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back for more in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're on a tour of the history of children's books, and we're understanding the milestones along the way. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Children's literature historian Leonard Marcus is the author of The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. And he says, behind every children's book is a vision of childhood, a shared understanding of what childhood is all about. And so we're exploring this vision. How have you seen children's books grow and adapt to our changing times? But the great ones are so timeless. They stay true to the spirit of imagination that anything is possible when you're a kid who gets lost in a book. Why do you think these books are important? And what should a good children's book accomplish? What books are you picking up with your kids at the library? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Lisa von Drasik is curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota, and she contributed to the ABC of it. Lisa, let's look at some of these themes that run through the earliest books here, the themes and concepts that of early children's books. What do you see there?
Oh, you see the moral structure of the adults trying to get the kids to be human beings. I think that's, you know, we're looking at primers. We're looking at a lot of biblical prescription that when the idea was to instill society norms in children. So when we start in the beginning, the words that are being used are all about you shouldn't do this and don't do that or you will go to hell. Because remember, the present day is meaningless. What you need to do is be an upstanding citizen.
To get through to grow up, you have to have these morals, right?
And Leonard's words, he has a very dry sense of humor. So he begins with sinful or pure, the spiritual child. And we're looking at Puritan values. We're looking specifically at New England and English thought. We're thinking of and this is not a complete history because he's speaking mostly about that Western thought. He's not going other places. But when you think about the books of your childhood, you're thinking most. Everyone in the United States at one time or another has run into the Aesop's fables.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think about how far that goes to ancient Greek, that these are the interesting things that we think about, that these books were around specifically for grown-ups who were hearing stories, but then written down and illustrated for children. That was the transformation.
Oh, so it was almost like illustration was the adaptation that they thought children really needed to understand these upright morals.
Right. That is correct.
When did we see a switch in children's literature? When did it really start to take off in the United States?
Well, when you think about that history, there were different branches. But when I think of the big turning point, I think of Wanda Gog's Millions of Cats. Because if we're thinking about the picture book, the actual picture book, historians consider Wanda Gog's book the uniquely American picture book where she integrated the words with the picture. She was an artist. She was a bohemian. She lived in New York City. In the book, you see the original, you don't see the original. You see a copy of the original manuscript of Wanda Gog's Millions of Cats in her, typewritten. We'll have to explain what a typewriter is to the kids today. Typewritten on onion skin, her notes hand lettered on the sides to change this, change that, and then her address hand lettered is Wanda Gog, 527 East 78th Street, New York. And that's the beauty of archives, is you can hold these things in your hands and you can see one of the original spreads of Wanda Gog's Millions of Cats, and you see the cats, but you also see the hand lettering and the cutting and pasting. When I teach, I have to explain that cutting and pasting is not a computer word. This is people cut out the paper and pasted it on top of each other so they wouldn't have to do the whole picture over. And so that is on one of the spreads. I also want to let people know that most of our collection is given to us, the generosity of donors. And so when you page through this book, you have to remember that these artists gave these materials to be held for open access that anybody can come and visit, but also that putting together this book, Leonard Marcus gave his time. Lauren Stringer, an artist and illustrator, did all of the design. So when you go to the page 150 and you see this lovely gift of a spread where you see this original art and the manuscript and the covers, you can see the process of the making of the picture book because of all these people giving their time.
Lots of hands in it. Yeah. Let's take a call now. Mary joining us from Door County. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a fan of A.A. Milne and
yes.
More his poetry than the books. I know about Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh, but the poetry of there's a wonderful book, When We Were, yeah. And
what's the favorite book, Mary? Yeah. Go, Mary, what is your favorite book?
I think the one is Now We Are Six.
Mm-hmm.
There's two books of that I'm very familiar with, and I had, as a child of maybe 5 or 6 years old, memorized. I had an auntie who was a teacher, and she would loan me those books from her personal collection, but I still have them, and I ought to donate them to you. But James Morrison, Weatherby John Dupree, took great care of his mother, though he was only 3. James said to his mother, "Mother," he said, "he must never go down to the end of the town without consulting me." Goes on and on for about 3 pages. I to know the
that,
whole
that
thing.
That is one of my favorites.
Oh, good. And then you must know Undecided. I never did. I never did.
Mm-hmm.
I never did like that up there, dear. And I never did. I never did. Hold my hand. And goes on. And then the last line, "I never did. I never did." It's no use saying it. They just don't understand.
Oh, Mary, and, thank you so much for these contributions.
Got me through a lot of faculty meetings.
Oh, that is so neat.
I'm so glad to hear, Mary, because I am a big believer in memorizing poetry and just having it when you're standing in line at Trader Joe's and sharing with the kids. Kind of melting down. It's a great distraction.
I'll have to keep that in my back pocket. Let's go to Rick now in Fond du Lac. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I was calling to ask about the guest thoughts on the use of children's book in child psychology, which goes back to works like The Uses of Enchantment by Bruno Bettelheim and others that talk about the important role that children's books play in helping children work through their fears and development. And it seems like that's been going on for maybe longer than the use of those books in the home. But it's a huge, huge, I think, role for reading. It's not just skill building for reading, but also for helping children develop.
Rick, thank you. Lisa, what about the use of children's books in psychology?
He's right that it's something that we have deep discussions about, and he's also right. There's two ways to look at that. When he started his question, I actually was thinking about how, as a children's librarian, one of the most requested books or types of books is books about grieving and death. Children, I'm talking from grown-ups, so if a grown-up comes to a children's librarian, probably the number one thing they're asking, even before, you know, how do I get my kid to go on the potty, is how can I talk to my child about death and grieving? And fortunately, that's where your librarian comes in. That's the librarian is trained to talk about these things, and you don't always want to go directly to a book about grandma dying or about your pet dying or how you feel about it, but maybe a once removed to talk about the process we go through. So a book like Robie Harris's Goodbye Mousie is a way to sit with a child and read about and talk about those big feelings and how we grieve and what is death, without it being a traumatic experience.
Right. There are ways, you know, the book mm-hmm. provides a platform that actually opens up more of a conversation than...
That's right. And a way to express a child can express themselves at their developmental level. And I think that's what he's getting at, is that when we think of Where the Wild Things Are, that's a deep, deep book about anger and how scary anger is for a child. And so to have that ability to go into the fantasy of having a wild rumpus and that autonomy, even though your entire life is grown-ups telling you what to do.
We are on this magical ride, tour of children's literature through the ages. Curator Lisa von Drasik calls this ride an adventure park experience of children's literature that places fresh context on the why this body of work matters to our world. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you consuming specific children's books lately? I know we're on a Captain Underpants roll right now in our house. How do you deal with the books that your kids love, but you would like to read other ones? Join in 800-642-1234 back after this news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're tracing the history of children's literature and its influences through time. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And so before we go on, let's take this moment to remember Nobel and Pulitzer Prize-winning author Toni Morrison, who has died. She contributed to children's literature 20 years ago. She came out with The Big Box, which is a philosophical parable. Kids are banished to live in a box. They break free. And she poses this question, who says they can't handle their own freedom? And then in 2002, she co-wrote with her son The Book of Mean People, which is a lighthearted look into how children experience meanness and promote kindness. And then a decade ago, she had Peanut Butter Fudge, which celebrates intergenerational love by passing down Grandma's fudge recipe. Toni Morrison was 88. What books do you want to share with kids? What children's books do you love to read out loud? How do you balance your favorites from childhood with newer titles? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. And Lisa von Drasik is curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota. She contributed to the new book, The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Doug joining us from Baraboo. Hi, Doug.
Hi there. I just wanted to share, well, one, I just had a baby boy on Monday, so I got a new little one added to the family, which I plan to read to.
Oh, but, congrats.
Thank you. When I was younger, my dad had these two hardcover books. I thought they were from the 40s. They might be from the 60s. And they were a collection of stories and poems and rhymes and all kinds of things. And the only one, well, there's two that I can remember right off the top of my head, which was one was The House That Jack Built because of the repetition in it. And I loved being able to say that as fast as I could. And the other was about some mushy-gushy mashed potatoes in his pocket. And there was different layers of sticky things that he kept putting in his pocket. But that was another one that you repeated through.
Now, I just want to say that you have hit on exactly the perfect, what is perfect for your new baby is rhythm, rhyme, and repetition. And you have found it from your childhood and, of course, many new books. And I want to urge you, they say that you should read, they say, Mem Fox, I'll tell you who said it. Mem Fox said you should have 1,000 books read aloud before kindergarten. And you start right now, 3 a day. It can be the same book 3 times. And you will have made that milestone, and that will start your child on the road to reading.
I love that. And Mem Fox, she had those bedtime books, Saying Goodnight to the Animals.
Oh, yes. And Koala Lou, I Do Love You.
That is so wonderful. Well, let's get to, a Wisconsin native here, Lois Ellard, born in Beaver Dam. She lives in Milwaukee now. And literally, she's a graphic designer by trade. Her books, though, have I mean, the illustrations just jump off the page with the color, like Planting a Rainbow and Chicka Chicka Boom Boom. Can you tell us about Lois?
Yeah, Lois Ehlert lives in Milwaukee, still lives in Milwaukee, and she generously gave her entire life's work to the Curlin Collection for safekeeping. And in her, each one of her books, as you, if you looked at a shelf of her books, each one is a different wonderful piece of art. It's for young hands. She focuses on early childhood. Many of them are nonfiction or informational books, like a book, Waiting for Wings, which is flowers in a butterfly garden. And today, think how prescient, is that the word, that she was. She's talking about the pollinators. And so this butterfly is waiting for wings. We turn through these pages. It's on 217 of the book. You also see the dummy, the process of making the book. And every children's book artist, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what your artistic style is, creates a dummy book, which is a forerunner of the finished book, so you can see the page turns. Because like music, you want to hear it over and over again. A picture book needs to work the same way. And it's those page turns that cause the drama of the book. And when we look at Lois's work as a graphic artist, you know, a lot of women artists do not get their due. And when there's panel discussions and exhibits being made, the women are forgotten because I don't know why, because sexism, gender, whatever. So we made a special effort in this exhibit to pull the women out of the cavern and show their work.
I was watching this YouTube conversation with her where she was saying that her parents really promoted her to find a place to do her art every day and not have to pick it up and put it away, that she had this card table where she did her art and she could have it as messy as she wanted it to be.
I urge people to look at her book Scraps, where I think there might be even a picture of that in there. And she talks about how to help your child be a creative person, a writer, an artist, by providing these things.
Well, let's take another call now. Stephanie joining us from Racine. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. So I just wanted to make a mention of a book I had when I was a kid. It's a monster at the end of this book with Grover. And it was just a wonderful book when I was a kid. And it was kind of about, you know, fearing what's on the other side and then realizing it's kind of okay. And it's not as scary as it is. And actually, I was in the Army. And when I was, we were at the airport and I was getting ready to board the plane, my mom gave me a copy of that book. And she wrote a wonderful message in it, and there was kind of a lot of tears, and it was just about, you know, being okay. And I remember being on the plane and just kind of reading it and holding it close. And it's about just, you know, these childhood books aren't just there when you're little. They're, you know, they kind of stay with you, and the message stays with you even when you're an adult. So that was just wonderful.
That's such a beautiful story, Stephanie. And Lisa, it really speaks to the power of this book and this exhibition that was put together.
I love it. There's a monster at the end of this book. I love that. That's one that she brought up. That's a Sesame Street book, did you know? So when you think of popular culture and things that are embedded in our everyday lives, if you think of Alice through the Looking Glass and Alice in Wonderland, I'm late for a very important date. These things come to mind and bring a resonance from our childhood, but also how we can, I urge everyone when they're thinking right now, they've got kids going off to college. Why not buy a new copy of a book that you love together and send that with a child, a young adult, an 18-year-old going off to college? What could be better when they can't sleep at 11 o'clock at night and feeling big feelings to revisit their childhood.
Reminds me of the popular book you give to kids when they go off to college, Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Mm-hmm. Seuss. So, you know, certainly Dr. Seuss, a good person to talk about right now. What was it about his work that resonated with kids?
Well, for generations, as Leonard Marcus points out, he was the go-to for learning to read. Again, we think of these easy readers as something that have always been around, but it started with a bet. Could Theodore Geisel create an interesting book to read with limited language that for children who are just learning to read? What did you learn to read? What do you remember what book it was that
One
had that
Fish,
aha
Two
moment?
Fish. Right. Yeah. Red Fish, Blue Fish, Black Fish, Blue Fish. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that aha moment where you go, oh, that G and green eggs and ham, green, and the silliness and the fun of it. Now, I have to say I'm of a certain age where I learned to read with Dick and Jane books because those were the primers that were brought home by my older brother.
Mm-hmm.
So there I was, 4 years old, going, S-S-C-C, oh! And that connection, and parents shouldn't worry if it takes kids longer or they don't get it right away, that it's not a big deal. As long as they're reading aloud, the kids are hearing those words, they're able to embed that in their brain. So when the moment comes, that switch. And for enjoying books, it really is about self-selection. And if you have a fourth grader who refuses to read, or that 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you have to stand over them every night so that they're reading their assignment, that's just taking away the joy, because the joy comes when that moment comes when a fourth or fifth grader who's been struggling sees the movie in their head. And sometimes it's Kate DiCamillo, sometimes it's Captain Underpants.
Yeah.
But surround children with books, get them on that public library card, and get them out there so that when that moment comes, they're ready for it.
And then also that librarian who can say, oh, because you like this, you might like mm-hmm. this. And
So because your children like Captain Underpants, may I suggest Bad Kitty?
I will pick it up.
May I suggest Princess in Black?
We are exploring children's literature on a journey here with Lisa Vondrasek as our guide. She's curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota. So what children's book do you pick up and take with you through all the stages of your life? What children's book has an inscription that has incredible meaning to you, and that message holds true in the book itself, like Stephanie told us in Racine? Join in at 800-642-1234. The new book is called The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're appreciating children's books through the ages here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're learning how certain authors and titles stand the test of time. And then how, as adults, we might need to jog our memories a bit to understand just how important these books have been to us through the decades. So let's throw out some names. Cat in the Hat, Goodnight Moon, Harold and the Purple Crayon, Where the Wild Things Are, Winnie the Pooh, Curious George, The Snowy Day. Time to bring on yours and add to the list. 800-642-1234. Lisa Vondrasek is curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections at the University of Minnesota. She contributed to the new book, The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Kay joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kay.
Hi there. I have loved children's books since my own children were small. So by the time, that was 50 years ago, by the time I began teaching freshman English at North Division in the 80s, I had quite a collection of my favorite children's books. I particularly love Lucille Clifton's series, Everett Anderson's Goodbye. And my students had brothers and sisters, and some of them even had children of their own. And so I decided a unit on reading to children would be a good thing, and it's one of my favorite memories of teaching. I brought in my collection of children's books, and we read some of them together, and we walked to the nearby Martin Luther King Library, where the children's librarian gave us a presentation. One of the things I learned from her that I wish I had known as a young mother was when you read to a toddler, let that toddler hold something in their hand so they're less likely to want to rip the pages of the book, which certainly happened to one of our books. At any rate, I wanted to say, you mentioned Lois Ehlert and her wonderful books, and the book that the students and the children, because then we went also on a field trip to a daycare center where they read to the children, and one of the favorite books for them to read and for the children to hear was Lois's Chicka Chicka Boom Boom.
Oh, that is so neat. Kay, how was your lesson unit on children's books? How was that received by the high school students?
Oh, they loved it. Yeah, they took a great interest in it. And the first year we did it, we had them actually bring babies from home. That I got in a little trouble for that. They weren't sure they wanted children in the cafeteria at lunchtime, little children. But they were just really very proud. I took pictures of them, and we had a display in the classroom of them reading, and I think we all enjoyed it a great deal.
Kay, thanks so much. Lisa, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm so shocked when she said Everett Anderson's Goodbye, which is an amazing book. But just yesterday, boxes and boxes from Anne Grifalcone, the illustrator of Everett Anderson's Goodbye, came to us yesterday.
Oh, Christmas boxes in August.
It was like, oh my. Her amazing, groundbreaking illustrations, give us some time to process them, but anyone can come see them at our library. Isn't that a crazy coincidence?
That is neat. Lisa, let's talk a little bit here about censorship and books that perhaps didn't make it out there. Why are children's books so often this lightning rod for controversy about what is in them?
Oh, well, that's a big question, if you have a couple days. I think it's because there's this, and not unreasonable, feeling that we need to protect children from books. Whether it's books like Captain Underpants, where the language... Now, are you reading those books aloud to your children?
Oh, yes.
And how old are your children?
Oh, they're the 8-year-old and the 5-year-olds appreciate them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So your 5-year-olds appreciating it enormously. Is inappropriate language being used by the 5-year-old? And is the 5-year-old name calling poopy pants?
Oh, of course. Like of course. And we relish those sentences.
And that's lovely that you do, but many parents may not. And they will come to the librarian, me. And this has happened to me, so I'm talking from personal experience, and say, please take that book off the shelf of the library. Do not let my child take those books home. And the wonderful thing about the United States of America, we can all take a moment, of the uniquely public library, the mission of the librarian is to present the materials. It is the parent's responsibility to say, I don't want or I do want that child to read this book or not read this book. But it is not the job of the librarian to take books off of the shelf, because you may not want your child to have Captain Underpants, because maybe this four-year-old does not have the understanding that he shouldn't come home and call his little sister Poopy Pants. You might find that offensive. If you find that offensive, then don't read those books aloud. That's fine. But you don't have the right to take those books out of the hands of other people. And the phrase librarians use is freedom to read or intellectual freedom. We provide the information. We provide the materials. But there is a history of movements of people who want, whether they think it's going to harm the child or cause distress, or it's not part of their family's philosophy, they want books off of the shelves. And so there is a section of the book about censorship, books that are read under the covers. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you don't want to be reading Judy Blume aloud to a 10-year-old. Maybe wait till they pick it up themselves and explore and reflect their own growing bodies and their lives at school. That it might not be the book you're sharing at a tender moment of reading aloud. Some books are private. Some books you want to read on your own and not be sharing with your grown-up in your house.
Well, we have time for just one more call here. John joining us from Wazika. Hi, John.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Fabulous program. I'd have to say my all-time favorite, I think, was Wind in the Willows.
Mm.
And others in my top 10 list would be, of course, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. And I'm sad I can't remember the author's name, but a series that one of which was called My Father's Dragon.
Hmm. Oh,
it's Ruth Gannett.
Lisa, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ruth Gannett is My Father's Dragon. The Elmer stories, as we call them. The Dragons of Blue Land.
Aha. Uh-huh. John, does that ring a bell?
Ooh. It sure does. I read those books to my boys when they were young. I'm 64 now, and I still go back and reread them once in a while.
Oh.
It's so much fun.
Well, John, thanks so much for calling in. And Lisa, in the last minute we have together on this, what do you think the future holds for children's books?
It's a brilliant, wonderful future. There's more diversity being published. There's beautiful artists being published. And independent presses are coming into their own. So I think the future is bright.
And what is your favorite children's book? Can you pick a favorite?
I cannot. I'm so sorry. You have to tell me the kid and I'll tell you the age group. But I think from our collection, the most wonderful thing that we had on exhibit, and it's in the book, is The Little Fur Family. And it is an actual little tiny, as big as a child's hand, book bound in rabbit fur.
Ooh, so you really get the tactile experience.
So it's amazing to see these things. It's amazing to share them.
Well, Lisa, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. And tell people, come visit. We want them to come visit our library.
Lisa von Drasik is curator of the Children's Literature Research Collections. That's at the University of Minnesota. She wrote the foreword for the new book, The ABC of It, Why Children's Books Matter. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.